Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon Central Time, and there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hey, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, and we always do mean it when we say thanks for listening in. Just know that you have plenty of options, a lot of things going on, and so to carve out a little time to join us always means a lot. We appreciate it. And, of course, if you can't stick around, maybe on the lunch hour and got a tight schedule, you can always catch our conversations online. Get the podcast at myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com, and you can click on the Connecting Faith show page and listen to some great past interviews, and today will be no exception, I think. Before we start, Ryan, we should mention, I don't know if we've talked about it for a while, but you know, we have a monthly opportunity for you to grow in your faith by getting a new study Bible. And we've got the New Living Translation Life Application Study Bible, thanks to our friends at Tyndale House. And once a month, we do a little drawing. Everybody, you can just sign up online for the study Bible, and we do a drawing and give one of those away a month. And it's the full Bible. You know, it's the thick one.
For those of you who can't see it,
that's
Neil
right.
is actually showing
yes, that's right.
the size of the Bible
yes,
with his fingers.
That's right. I mean, you could do damage if you dropped it on your foot. But actually, I want to mention that. That's a resource that, and maybe in light of our conversation today, it's something, you know, it's that I need to get more into God's Word and study a little closer, and so just encourage you to check that out when you go online next time, myfaithradio.com. Are you a large animal fan when you go to the zoo?
I thought you were going to ask it first. Are you
no,
a large animal?
No, okay,
like,
yes.
I'm a little hurt by that.
Sure.
But,
sorry.
But yes.
So, you know, lions, tigers, and bears, oh my.
Oh okay, my. Yeah. They're yeah. so interesting.
Yeah.
But they look like they could really... You know, they're powerful. You can see the power.
Well, that fits in nicely. I mean, it's like you read the promo. Our conversation today, we're going to talk about a new book just coming out. In fact, I think it officially comes out probably next week. Yawning at Tigers. You can't tame God, so stop trying. That's the subtitle. And our guest today is Drew Dick, who's the author of Generation X Christians, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Faith, and How to Bring Them Back, that came out a couple years ago. Drew is the managing editor of Leadership Journal. That's a publication of Christianity Today International, and I recommend that. I always benefit from reading it, and I would encourage you to check that out as well. Before coming to CT, he was editor of New Man magazine. He's written more than 100 articles for Christian secular publications, regular contributor to Faith Today, Boundless.org, and ConversantLife.com. Drew grew up in Red Deer, Alberta, which is a fur piece from here, where I don't think they had a lot of lions and tigers, probably a bear occasionally, maybe a lot of bear. But Drew, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hey, it's great to be here. I appreciate that you got in my Canadian roots.
Well, we wanted to. I mean, you have lived in Portland and Pasadena and Orlando and now Chicago. So I guess you've sort of acclimated to the lower 48 a little bit. But
exactly, although with the past winter here in Chicago, I feel like I'm home again.
Yes. Yeah, so there probably weren't a lot of lions and tigers in Alberta. I don't think, were there?
No, but you're absolutely right. There were bears, especially. I lived in northern Alberta when I was a kid, and you know, grizzly bears would amble right into town, so that was always a bit of an issue. Keep you on your toes.
You know, we're going to talk a little bit about, I guess, keeping on our toes today, but I want to reference the new book, the title Yawning at Tigers. You can't tame God, so stop trying it. You know, the book publisher talks about, you know, how we sometimes get too casual in our shallow, self-centered age, and we don't really recognize or perhaps fully appreciate the majesty of God and His holiness and His power. But you start out with just illustration about going to the zoo. So take us to the zoo with you and your family and the large animal exhibit, and just talk a little bit about what you've observed.
Yeah, You know, like you guys were saying, you know, often we go to the zoo and we want to see the large kind of predators, the animals that are both beautiful and dangerous. Of course, you don't want to meet them when you're out hiking. But when you go to the zoo, those are the first animals you want to see, because there's something about an animal that is dangerous and large that is fascinating to us. And, you know, what really made me think about this actually was a few years ago, and some of the listeners will remember this probably, but there was an incident in Zanesville, Ohio, where this guy who had a private zoo released all his animals, which included, you know, bears, lions, tigers, before tragically taking his own life. And what ensued was sheer panic in that town. I remember the news reports about, you know, telling residents to stay inside because there are tigers and lions loose in the town, and people all locked their doors, and they spotted these animals all over the place. And what it did for me, it kind of took my mind in a different direction. I thought, you know, here these people are in the presence of something dangerous and powerful, and they take it very seriously. But often, as Christians, you know, people who claim to know a transcendent, holy, dangerous God, often we kind of come to church. It's a pretty casual affair. Our worship's kind of, you know, lackluster, and we're lackadaisical about our interactions with God. But when you crack open the Bible and you read about the stories, especially in the Old Testament, of God's interactions with the Israelites and you know, God warning Moses to keep the people back from the mountain where God came down, lest he break out against them, you almost get this feeling that God is wild and untamed and dangerous. And sometimes I think we lose sight of that fact. And I believe it's a loss, because there is something that actually draws us, that makes us, gives us a sense of sobriety in our worship when we see God that way.
You used the word dangerous a couple times. I know I was reading the book again just today, just reviewing it. And, you know, there's kind of a balance that we need to maintain, I guess, between the God who is dangerous, but also the God who is loving. I mean, I guess you can sort of, you can take it to the other extreme, right? And just assume that God is, you know, is truly, you know, untouchable, unknowable.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say that God's dangerous qualities are not opposed to or antithetical to his love. And yet you're right, there's a balance there. And at certain points in church history, perhaps, the pendulum swung too far in the other direction, say with the Puritans, for instance, where God was kind of, you know, far off and dangerous and holy and maybe even disapproving and angry. But I think from what I observe, you know, and I've grown up in the church, my dad was a pastor, and I feel like I'm a real insider when it comes to evangelical culture. But what I've observed, I believe, is that the pendulum has swung too far the other way. You know, people, especially my generation, they'll talk about God is the big guy upstairs. Jesus is our homeboy. I've talked to girls that say that they're dating Jesus. I didn't have the heart to tell them that in order to do that, you'd have to first divorce the church. anyway, but basically, you know, what that language to me shows is that we have a very cozy, casual view of God often, and we forget that, you know, as Isaiah says, this is a God who dwells in unapproachable light, the Lord of heaven and earth. He's not a cosmic buddy. And so I am really keen to see people regain that vision, rediscover a vision of God's holiness, and approach him accordingly.
We'll come back and talk a little bit more about that, you know, that Isaiah chapter 6, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. But tell me a little bit about, maybe as you, you know, having grown up in the church, I mean, we're familiar, I guess, with God's characteristics, but in terms of world religions, I know there's you know, different viewpoints about God being transcendent or imminent. I don't know. I guess they're kind of both extremes exhibited in world religions too, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, and just for, these are kind of theological terms, so just very simply put, God's transcendence means that he is above and beyond us, and literally and figuratively. He is not on the level of a human. And his immanence means that he's near. You know, in a sense, he's everywhere. We talk about inviting Jesus into our hearts. And so God is literally within us. And that's the, you know, the tension that Christianity maintains, is that it holds both God's transcendence and his immanence and treats them both seriously. But like you said, with other world religions, often we get them focusing on one extreme or the other. For instance, Islam, God is utterly transcendent. I mean, you've heard of how angry Muslims get in the Middle East when someone even portrays the Prophet Muhammad or if there's any sort of depiction of God, because God to them is so far above us that, you know, we, first of all, we can barely even know about him. He's so transcendent. And they don't have this sense of the immanent God. On the other hand, you get Eastern religions, say Hinduism, Buddhism, where, you know, the divine is indistinguishable from the human. So, you know, you're God, I'm God, the river is God, the rocks, the trees, and that's the other extreme. Of course, Christianity denies both of those things, but it takes God's transcendence and his immanence very seriously. What I'm concerned about is that we resist the urge to collapse one side of that paradox and just say, well, God is close to me and he's very loving and he's always here, and kind of forget that he's also the transcendent God, the one, you know, Isaiah saw high and lifted up. On the other hand, we don't want to lose that immanence, that closeness, and just focus on God's transcendence.
We can continue to focus more on who God is, not only his majesty and his power and his holiness, but also his love, and his love revealed in the person of Jesus. As we talk today with Drew Dick, Drew is managing editor of Leadership Journal. It's a publication of Christianity Today. And he's author of a brand new book just out called Yawning at Tigers. You can't tame God, so stop trying. It's just out from Thomas Nelson. And we'll talk more with Drew in just a moment. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Or you can always drop us a note if that's more convenient by going online to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there, and we'll chat more in just a moment here on Faith Radio.
On Friday's Faith Radio Mornings, it was 9 years ago that three sober brothers wearing seatbelts, driving responsibly, were killed when one young man made three deadly choices. Join us to hear Nathan and Connie Backstrom's story of loss, grief, and faith.
And with Mother's Day coming up this weekend, the mother-in-law-daughter-in-law relationship can be one of the most stressful and challenging relationships there is. We'll hear from Deb DeArmond about a scriptural foundation for this relationship and how it can actually be spiritual.
Friday's Faith Radio Morning starts at 6 a.m.
When I graduate, I want to have debt the size of a mortgage.
Said no one ever. With state-funded PSEL through Northwestern, your student doesn't have to. By getting a jump start on college credits while still in high school, they'll graduate earlier and save tons of money. And they don't have to give up their activities and time with friends. In fact, courses can be taken online anywhere. Deadlines are coming fast, so visit unwsp.edu/PSEO. University of Northwestern, St. Paul.
God's not dead, he's surely alive. He's living on the inside, growing like a lion. God's not dead, he's surely alive. He's living on the inside, growing like a lion.
You probably could have a little roar sound effect here, couldn't we? Just to kind of add to the discussion. Yawning at Tigers, that's the title of a new book from Drew Dick just out. And we're talking about how our tendency is to sort of tame God, and that is not a wise thing to do, or it can't be done anyway. Drew serves as managing editor of Leadership Journal, and it's a publication of Christianity Today International. He's also authored the book, A Generation Ex-Christian, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Faith and How to Bring Them Back. We might get into that here by the end of the program, too, just to touch on that a bit. So we're talking about understanding maybe more about who God is, seeing him in his majesty and his power and his holiness. I was thinking, Drew, maybe before we talk about that, that there is an aspect that you address in the book, and that's sort of the hiddenness of God, that, you know, there's sometimes unbelievers say, well, why wouldn't God just sort of write his name across the sky? But the fact is probably that believers, we have kind of a challenge with his hiddenness as well sometimes.
Absolutely. You know, how often we just wish that God would spell it out for us and kind of show up in some way that was undeniable or spectacular. I remember I had a friend who had joked that he says, I wish God would speak to me, but with a Russian accent, so I could tell that it wasn't my voice. but you know, seriously, you kind of long for that. And unfortunately, you know, what often happens, and this is kind of the way, this was Jesus' MO when he was on earth. He wasn't running around shouting that he was the Messiah. he wasn't eager to, you know, prove who he was to everyone who came up to him. In fact, sometimes he was a little bit, you know, cryptic and enigmatic about his identity. But we still kind of crave to see those undeniable manifestations of God. And yet, when I read Scripture, and I when God did show up to people, to Isaiah, to Ezekiel, to Mary, in these instances, it was often very overwhelming. And so I've learned to see, you know, God's hiddenness as frustrating, certainly, but also as a sort of act of mercy, this God who, you know, guards us against the full weight of his glory, which, of course, we can't really take on this side of eternity in our fragile bodies. But I think as a Christian, one of the challenges, of course, is to keep your eyes open for where God is in the world. And, you know, like Jesus says, you know, he is, as you do to the least of these, you do unto me. And so the people that are disenfranchised and marginalized in our society are often the people that we need to be watching for most closely, because in a very real way, we encounter Christ when we encounter them.
As you talked about, it was a phrase that caught my attention as we were talking sort of about how Jesus, you know, didn't always fully reveal himself. It was hard to understand and easy to miss. And I thought, you know, that probably is an apt description for many people, just in terms of trying to understand what is this this faith all about, that there are aspects that are hard to understand and easy to miss.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think God chooses to be more subtle because, you know, that makes us seek for him. That makes us trust in him, to have faith. He is a gentleman, you know. He isn't someone who just overwhelms us and forces us to acknowledge and worship him.
But, you know, when it comes to worship, one of the things that I also wanted to reflect on in your book, you talk a little bit about, you know, Moses being up on the mountaintop. The people wonder, well, we don't know what happened to him. And so Aaron puts together a little golden calf and, you know, becomes their idol, and they worship him at a— You know, we're not making golden calves today, but it does seem like, you know, we still have some issues of idolatry in terms of maybe determining how we want to see God, or we make him in our image in some ways.
Exactly. And, of course, it's more subtle. You're right, because we're not melting down gold or carving up wood and bowing down, at least not most of us in the Western world. And yet, I do believe idolatry is still an issue, because whenever we kind of reconceptualize God to fit our preconceived notions, and, you know, as we read the Bible, often there are things that are a little difficult to understand, perhaps even disconcerting emotionally, and there's this tendency to kind of do an editing process on God and just dwell on those characteristics that we find comforting or that resonate with us. But when we do that, it's a subtle form of idolatry. You mentioned the Moses story, you know, when Moses is on the mountain and he's taking his sweet time, the people are getting restless and they tell Aaron to make them a golden calf. And what I find interesting about that passage that I didn't really see before is that after, when Aaron presents the golden calf to the people, he says, "Behold, Israel, your God who brought you out of Egypt." And then after, they have a celebration to the Lord, it says. And you go, you shake your head and you go, how in the world could a golden calf be Yahweh, Israel's God, and how could a crazy party that they have after worshiping this golden calf be called a festival to the Lord? But basically, the sin there that they committed wasn't just making idols. It was giving God a replacement, you know, because these things were supposed to be a stand-in for the true God. So I think that's something we do all the time, unfortunately, when we kind of create our own idea of God and end up bowing down before that, because then it doesn't become, you know, God who, you know, the Bible, as some people have said, should read you. You shouldn't read the Bible. So we need to let God be God and worship him how he is, how he's revealed himself to us. And I think in the long run, you know, that is the more powerful experience anyway, because we want a God who's bigger than us, who doesn't fit inside our categories, who doesn't neatly fulfill our 21st century sensibilities and expectations. In the end, that's the God that elicits wonder and awe.
Is this did this book come out of your maybe work at Leadership Journal, you know, CT, and writing for many years, observing the church, growing up in the church, that you just saw some trends and said, you know, we there's something missing here, even though there are great things happening in the church. I mean, Leadership Journal has been, you know, kind of pointing the way in many ways about what's effective and working and important. But so I'm just curious how this, you know, if this just comes out of observation around Christianity in general.
Yeah, you know, like I said before, growing up in the church, and you know, when I critique the church, I don't want to sound like an angry outsider because I'm not. I am, you know, I love the church. I am inside the church, and there's much to commend. But yeah, it was the things that I noticed, you know, and even the tendencies I saw in my own life. You know, you start with worship. Many of our worship songs these days could be sung to God or a girlfriend. Sermons drip with these assurances of God's inexhaustible affection, and that is good. We need those, but often we don't mention God's holiness, let alone his justice and wrath. And I think part of the problem is that we have a very therapeutic culture. So, you know, we start to relate to God on therapeutic terms. So, you know, things like God's majesty and holiness, we find a little disconcerting and troubling. So we tend to gloss over those attributes and just focus exclusively on his love. So that's what I saw, that something was missing, you know, and like I said before, it's important to recapture that sense of God's holiness. And the cruel irony of choosing God's love over his holiness is that we end up losing both, right? Because when we're talking about a great and holy God that loves us, that means something. But when it's the cosmic buddy who's, you know, not that much different than you or I, well, that doesn't mean as much. And so to really, you know, understand God's love, we have to be humbled by his holiness. We have to be, you know, overawed by his glory. And so that's something that we've lost in the church. And like I said, even in my own life, I'm certainly not immune to this, engaging God according to my own terms and ignoring those attributes that are hard to understand.
So, you know, when we think of holiness, I guess, what comes to mind, and you know, help us paint a picture more? What does it mean that God is holy? And we know the passage in Isaiah 6, Isaiah, I saw the Lord high and lifted up, his train filled the temple. But give us a sense of what it means that God is holy.
Yeah. Well, first of all, unfortunately, there are a lot of negative connotations surrounding this word holiness that are just plainly false. You know, in the culture, if you use the word holy, people think of someone who's kind of a snob, maybe someone who has a holier-than-thou attitude. And unfortunately, you know, of course, that's a far cry from what the scripture talks about. Basically, the primary meaning of the word holy in scripture is to be apart, you know, to set apart. And so when it talks about God, it means that he is in his own space, his own, you know, apart from humanity entirely. And Isaiah 6 is a great example, of course, because Isaiah has this overwhelming vision of God high and lifted up, his train kind of hovering over the temple. And it's an amazing image because there are seraphim, angels surrounding him, these beautiful creatures with three sets of wings. And with two sets of wings, they hide their face and their feet because the glory of God is too overwhelming that they can't even look at God. And, of course, Isaiah just cries out, woe is me, I'm ruined. Because I live among unclean people with unclean lips. So he's terrified when he sees this vision of God. And that gives you a sense of just how utterly transcendent and holy God is. And, you know, I have to laugh. You know, sometimes I think I hear people talking about, you know, oh, God, will you please give me a parking spot when I'm going to the mall and stuff. And I think if we had an Isaiah 6 vision of God, I don't think we'd be asking him for good parking spots. I think our prayers would be different. I think our worship would be different. I think it would revolutionize the way in which we approach this amazing God, and it would increase our appreciation for what he did in his son for us. Because that's the only reason, you know, incidentally, we can approach God is because of the incredible costly sacrifice of his son.
We'll talk more about it, how we cultivate that sense of the sacred and what that would look like, how that would change our lives if we truly saw God as he is in his majesty and his power and his holiness. We're talking to Drew Dick today. Drew is the managing editor of Leadership Journal. It's a publication of Christianity Today International. And he's authored a brand new book called Yawning at Tigers. You Can't Tame God, So Stop Trying. It's new out from Nelson Books. And we invite you to join the conversation, too. If you want to weigh in on the topic, you're welcome to. It's 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Or you can go online at myfaithradio.com and connect with us on our show page there, Connecting Faith. There's an email link, and we'll get your feedback and comments coming up more in just a moment as we talk with Drew Dick about yawning at Tigers.
God wonders beyond our
What would it really be like if we fully grasped the reality of that, the God of the universe in majesty and power and holiness, that he is Lord of heaven and earth, and we come to worship him as Isaiah saw the Lord high and lifted up, Isaiah chapter 6. We're talking today with Drew Dick, who is asking some of those questions. He's written about a brand new book called Yawning at Tigers. Drew serves as the managing editor of Leadership Journal. It's a publication of Christianity Today International. And he's also written the book Generation X Christian, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Faith and How to Bring Them Back. And the new one, as we talk a little bit about understanding who God is, really, that we know that it's a God who is not only dangerous yet accessible, mysterious yet powerfully present, a God who beckons us to see him with fresh, unfiltered gaze. So, Drew, let's talk about, we sort of focused a bit on Isaiah 6, you know, and what would happen if we, you know, were to cultivate a sense of the sacred, maybe like we've not done before?
Well, you know, first of all, and like I said before, I'm not exactly eager for an Isaiah 6 vision, literally.
Yeah.
But I do believe that we need, you know, to move more in that direction where we have an appreciation for God's holiness. And I think, you know, it would do a few things. First of all, like I referenced before, it would make our worship more meaningful, richer, deeper. Because we would appreciate not only God's holiness, but his love more. I believe when you really get a glimpse of God's holiness in worship, what it does, you don't have to drum things up as much. I think, you know, worship is the natural reflex of mortals to the presence of a holy God. That is really what elicits that awe and affection for God. And so if we focus on those characteristics of God, that emphasize his holiness, I think it would change our worship. Second, I really believe it would change our lives, the way we live our lives. There's been, you know, a lot of hand-wringing in the evangelical world about the state of holiness, you know, in our personal lives. And you're talking to a lot of members of the younger generation, I can attest that, you know, holiness, personal holiness, is something that is seen as optional or even legalistic. And for me, I think, you know, why is there such confusion on a basic Christian teaching that we should be living holy lives? Well, I think it traces back to an inadequate understanding of God. And, you know, when we lack a vision of God's holiness, we shouldn't be surprised to see our own holiness suffer, to see those characteristics go missing in our own lives. So I think if we had a greater understanding of God's holiness in Scripture, you kind of see a pattern when God shows up in a powerful way, reveals himself to someone. Well, first of all, often they fall face down to the ground and become convinced they're about to die. But second, you know, they don't stay there. God usually facilitates some way for them to kind of come back to their senses and calm down. And then they worship God. And then they have this renewed willingness to obey him. In the case of Isaiah, Isaiah says, you know, here I am, send me. After his great vision of God, he doesn't need a motivational speech. He is ready to go out and serve the Lord and be his mouthpiece. And so if we recaptured some of that vision, I think we would find the same thing happens in our lives.
There was a reference, you made a quote from R.C. Sproul. Said, our ultimate goal as believers is to see what Moses wasn't allowed to see, the glory of God face to face. What a great image. Mm-hmm. Talk about that picture and that hope. I mean, that, you know, the glory of God is just sort of a, you know, maybe it's an old phrase we read in the Psalms and in a few old hymns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love that quote from R.C. Sproul, and I think what he's alluding to there, of course, is the image of the story of Moses up on the mountain, and Moses says, God, show me your glory. And God, in essence, says, you don't know what you're asking for. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll stuff you over here behind a rock, and I'll just pass by, and you can get a glimpse of my back, because that's all you can handle. Because if you see me, you know, face to face, it's not going to end well for you. And so I think there is a deep down desire in each one of us, even though it's scary, even though it can even be terrifying, to someday be face to face with the Creator, the person who made us. And that's a deep seated desire that, you know, the good news of the gospel is that we will get to do that, not based on our own merits, of course, but on the sacrifice that Jesus made for us. And so that's an exciting prospect for sure.
You know, we're talking about sort of moving the direction of understanding God's majesty and holiness, that our worship would be deeper. I'm wondering if, you know, you've covered all sorts of issues and topics with Leadership Journal and Christianity Today, but, you know, church structures have changed a lot over the years. I mean, we're not necessarily building so many new church buildings that look like, you know, the high steeples. You know, we're not taking, you know, early, 16th century European styling anymore. Is there something to, or, and, you know, we dress casually. I mean, are those kinds of things part of what it means to maybe acknowledge God's majesty?
That's an interesting point. You know, I think they're probably, reflections of our theology often. Now, I wouldn't necessarily advocate that, hey, we need more ostentatious worship gatherings, because that just may not be feasible economically. But the thing we can change is the content of our preaching, of our worship, the language we use when we talk about God. I find it interesting, for instance, that 9 out of 10 sermons that are preached in churches in America are preached on the New Testament. Of course, there's nothing wrong with preaching from the New Testament, but often I think what's behind that is that we're trying to circumvent preaching on those passages that portray God in ways that make us uncomfortable. You know, the God, the Lord of hosts, which of course is a title that portrays God at the helm of a heavenly army ready for war. Those images come from the Old Testament, and often we don't like to talk about it. And then, like I talked about before, our worship songs are often saccharine and syrupy and sweet and bordering on romantic, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I think of, you know, Isaac Watts, the 18th century hymn writer, and he sang songs that had lyrics like, "A solemn reverence checks our songs, and praise sits silent on our tongues." You know, wow. I mean, there's a guy who got the glory of God. And so I think if we started, you know, writing different songs, preaching different sermons, and talking to each other in different ways, that would go a long way to restoring that balance of both God's love and his holiness. And listen, I'm not trying to downplay love. There's nothing wrong. In fact, we need to apply intimate language to our relationship with Jesus. I think of the disciple John. He referred to himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved. He's depicted in paintings, laying his head on Jesus' breast. That was a close, intimate relationship. But what I find interesting, when that same disciple is on the island of Patmos in Revelation, and Jesus, the post resurrected Christ, shows up with a sword coming out of his mouth, this powerful image, that same disciple falls at his feet, it says, as though dead. And so I think we got the first side of the equation. We're pretty good at cozying up to Jesus, but we need the second half of that equation, and to realize that he's the risen Lord. He's the judge of all the earth, and seated at the right hand of the Father, that vision of Jesus as well.
Interested that you talked about, you know, the Isaac Watts hymn, they called Silence, and wondering, you know, there's been kind of renewed interest in some of those important fundamental church disciplines or disciplines of the Christian faith. I'm wondering if you know, practically speaking, if we have maybe found ourselves yawning at tigers, is a discipline of silence and solitude, is that something that can help us maybe get back, redirect our thinking a bit?
Absolutely. You know, just as a culture, of course, we're very uncomfortable with silence. We have, you know, our mobile devices on us at all times. If we have a second in traffic, we will pull them out or distract ourselves in some way. And so it's radically countercultural to just be silent And it's amazing, even for me, how awkward it feels sometimes when you're in a place where you have to be silent and not distracted or looking at anything, even for a minute. But yeah, what a great reaction to God's glory and love, just to be silent. And so often in the Bible, again, when God showed up in front of people, they were silent, they were speechless, even people who were quite talkative. So I think, we need more times of silence and times where we just listen to God and listen for his presence.
You give a couple of illustrations in the book, Yawning at Tigers, about having opportunity to go places like Hawaii with family and just to be in the majesty of God's creation and some of the maybe observations you learn there. Talk a little bit about that, how just celebrating the God, the Creator God, can make a difference for us as well.
Sure. Well, first of all, I don't want to give you the impression I go to Hawaii too often.
No, I didn't set that up very well, did I? Yes, you still are a working guy, so and we know that you know. Chicago is about as fun as you can get from Alberta, so we'll give you that.
That's right. Yeah, I was in Hawaii for my 10-year anniversary, and it was awesome. The thing that made it a bit of a challenge was that we had our 8-month-old baby along, and I remember. One evening, as my wife was getting ready to go out for dinner, I thought, oh, it'll be fun to take the little guy down to the beach and show him the ocean for the first time, because since I'm in Chicago, he had never seen the ocean. And I remember taking him down, and these big waves were kind of coming in and crashing on the beach, and it was a beautiful scene. But instead of appreciating it, you might be able to guess what happened. He burst into tears as he was looking out at the ocean and how violent it was, and it was very noisy, and he kind of buried his face in my shoulder and started to cry, and I felt bad and took him away. But then, I realized that makes a lot of sense because the ocean is kind of scary, right? And there's an obvious, I think, analogy to the ocean and God. The ocean's beautiful. It's powerful. It inspires introspection, and people have written poems about it. But there's another side to the ocean, the scary side. It's dangerous, and if you go out in the ocean without proper training or equipment, it could kill you. And so I started to see some, parallels in how we approach God. Yes, he's beautiful. Yes, he's loving. At the same time, he is dangerous. And that's what I was talking about there.
It does, but there is something about the danger, I guess, the wildness that draws us, right? And maybe I kind of referred to it, I guess, there's maybe this natural reflex of worship. I mean, we do have a longing for that, don't we?
We do, exactly, yeah. I mean, people are drawn to the ocean. The ocean views are the best, right, because it's beautiful. And not just because it's beautiful, but because it's dangerous. And it's the same, when we talk about the dangerous animals. And I believe there is that draw to a dangerous God. And unfortunately, in our time, maybe people are skittish about it because we live in a time where there's been a lot of religious abuse. We have religious terrorists around the world and that kind of thing. So whenever you start talking about a dangerous God, people might get a little nervous. And of course, I'm not talking about that kind of danger, but I'm just talking about someone who is so unimaginably powerful. But ultimately, of course, turns out to be incredibly loving. And that right there is the good news of the gospel, that this great and dangerous God loved us so much that he thought up the most amazing way to bridge the gap between us.
We'll talk more about that in a moment, about God, the all-powerful, all-loving as well, and what that really means for us today, a bit about how not only when we long for God, but he more longs for us and pursues us. Discuss the tenacity of God in pursuing us. Coming up with Drew Dick in just a moment. Drew is the managing editor of Leadership Journal. It's a publication of Christianity Today International. He is a writer, speaker, and has written a new book called Yawning at Tigers. You can't tame God, so stop trying. That's the subtitle. It's out from Nelson Books. We'll continue our discussion in a moment. 877-93-FAITH if you'd like to join in.
From Provident Films and Affirm Films comes Mom's Night Out. Allison and her friends want a peaceful grown-up evening out while their husbands watch the kids for a few hours. At least, that's the plan. Mom's Night Out, a comedy about real life, starring Sarah Drew, Sean Astin, Patricia Heaton, and Trace Adkins. Mom's Night Out in theaters May 9th, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. More information is available at momsnightoutmovie.com.
That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called PrayerWorks.
An online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.
Time today to reflect on God's majesty and power and holiness, and how sometimes in our self-centered age, things like truth and reverence get lost or outdated. Thanks to Drew Deck's new book, we can do some recovery of that and reflect on some important questions. In fact, the book has a study guide in the end of it, so there's a great opportunity for you to maybe wrestle with it in your small group or your church. Yawning at Tigers is the book. Drew Deck is the managing editor of Leadership Journal, a publication of Christianity Today International. That's a recommended journal as well. I hope that you check that out. And, or Drew's other book called Generation X Christian, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Faith and How to Bring Them Back, came out from Moody Press here a few years back. Drew, we talked about how we're drawn kind of to the danger and the power of God, and yet the more amazing thing is that God has been pursuing us. In fact, let's talk about that loving pursuit of God, because on the one hand, when we think about, you know, if God truly is holy and powerful, and, you know, that we would kind of shy away from that as opposed to he pursue us.
Yeah, and often, of course, we do shy away from it or outright rebel. The thing that amazes me as I read the story of the Israelites, for instance, is just how many times, of course, they kept messing up, flipping into idolatry or just disobeying God, becoming discontent, you name it. And yet it was incredible just to, you know, you read how God again and again, I don't want to say came up with plan A and B and C, but it almost seems like he just finds new ways to reach out. And many of the Psalms, you know, and the writings of the prophets read like the writing of a spurned lover, where God just says, Israel, how long to, you know, to get you back, and yet you've been unfaithful, and that's reflected in Jesus' words as well. And so I see, you know, even though God is holy, even though he is unapproachable and powerful, at the same time, he has this, I want to say, almost desperate love for his creation. And the story of the Bible really is just a chronicle of that attempt to repeatedly close the gap and have intimacy with us, and finding ways to do that. And, of course, the ultimate example of that is what he did in his son.
In fact, I know you. Your experience involves seminary and getting some understanding about the Gospel of John, which really kind of sums it up well. I mean, John introduces to us Jesus, the one who is the creator and sustainer of all things, but yet he loved us and came to his own, even though we didn't receive him. Talk a little bit more about maybe just the message of John's gospel and what it means to you.
Yeah, I love the Gospel of John and that image. You know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And actually, the English there isn't the best. Really, it's pros-God, that is, Jesus and the Father are being portrayed as being face-to-face. And, of course, John is rewriting the creation narrative. He's saying in the beginning, actually before the beginning, God and his Word, that is, Jesus, were face-to-face, so they had this incredible, unbroken intimacy and love. And then it was out of that, the overflow of that love, that the world was created, that we were created. And what a beautiful creation story. You know, when you read, the Babylonian creation myths, for instance, the Enuma Elish and those kind of stories, what happens is you have this kind of soap opera of gods that are feuding in the heavens, and then in a remarkable act of foolishness, one of them creates humanity, and then they're in constant conflict with their ill-begotten creation. Well, the Bible reads completely different. John and Genesis both say, you know, God, singular God, created us in love, entered into relationship with us. The relationship was broken, and then he ceaselessly tries to win us back. And that's beautiful. And that ancient intimacy that the Word and God had before creation, we're invited to enter into that. And to me, that's beautiful and exciting.
The whole dynamic of Jesus and God with us, I mean, that is maybe where the challenge really comes for us, how we live that out, work that out day by day.
Yeah. And really, you know, I see a clue in the very nature of God in how we can live our lives. Because God, you know, he is beyond us, and yet he's intimate, he's close to us. And as Christians, we do a lot of thinking about, okay, how do we relate to the culture, right? We don't want to be indistinguishable from it, from the people around us that aren't believers, and yet we want to love them. So how do you strike that balance? Well, for me, the answer is in the very nature of God. In Jesus, God was completely enmeshed in society. He wasn't, you know, removed and immune from suffering and even death. And yet, Jesus, it says in the Bible, was without sin. And so he was able to retain that purity. So as people that are members of the kingdom that Jesus himself warned was not of this world, we have to retain that unique identity. At the same time, we can't cordon ourselves off in a holy huddle and avoid contact with the world, because we're called to dive in, to get dirty, to help people, to love people. So we need to be both other and intimate. And I'll acknowledge that's a tough balance, but I think it's one worth striving to maintain.
It's interesting. You know, Paul uses the word about being the fragrance of Christ. I know you kind of addressed that in the book as well. Say a little bit more about, you know, that. I mean, that's a good word picture, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, and of course it's something beautiful. And we're also called in the Bible a peculiar people, which I think is interesting. Yeah. Peculiar might not be the most flattering adjective, because you might think someone who's peculiar is strange, a little odd. And really, I think Christians should be like that. There should be something that looks different about us, that smells different, fragrance of Christ, something refreshing, at times even convicting. But that doesn't happen if we are closed off to the world and not engaging people. So, of course, we have to get out there and be like Jesus, who really just dove into the mess of humanity, even though it cost him everything.
I'm curious to know if this, you know, the idea of sort of missing the majesty and the power and the holiness of God, is that a generational issue? I know your book before this was talking about why young adults are leaving the faith and how to bring them back. I mean, is this, is this something that maybe a 20-something is going to be more prone to than a 60-something?
Yeah, perhaps. You know, although I'd say the baby boomer generation, folks in their 50s and 60s, we see that certainly in a lot of seeker-sensitive churches, not to get down on that, but a very casual view of God. So this is something that spans the generations, I believe. And yet you see a lot of the casual language about God among 20-somethings, certainly. And, yeah, I've thought about this. You know, how does this issue apply to an issue for, you know, many churches? And that is, where are the young people? How can we reengage the 20-somethings? And I find it interesting that the churches that often are engaging young people are ones that have reconnected with some of these ancient practices and spiritual disciplines. Some of the, you know, even high church traditions that use liturgy and that sort of thing. And I think that there's more going on there than, you know, people are attracted to just smells and bells and that kind of thing. Often those environments facilitate a reverence or a sense of the sacred to which young people are drawn. And so, you know, young people, yes, they will certainly have problems with some of the characteristics described in Scripture of God. And yet, I still think they're thirsty for transcendence. And so I think it's sad that as a church, we sideline God's transcendence when people are so thirsty for it.
God is the God who beckons us to see him with fresh eyes and let him lead us to a faith that's wild, adventurous, and rooted in a deep understanding of his eternal character, one of the lines from the book Yawning at Tigers. Drew Dick is my guest today. Drew, thank you for raising some questions and giving us some answers today, and we enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, I enjoyed it, too. Thank you so much.
Yawning at Tigers, it's a new book out from Nelson Books, and Drew Dick serves as managing editor of Leadership Journal. He's also author of Generation X Christian, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Faith and How to Bring Them Back. And I thought we might wrap up today's program with an old song that takes us back to Isaiah 6 from Dallas Home, and just giving us an opportunity to reflect on his holiness, his majesty, and power. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the show today, you can check it online at myfaithradio.com.
Then from sleep awakened, I looked into the night. The darkness overtaken by a bright and shining light. Oh, I couldn't understand it. I couldn't reason how. When my eyes beheld it, I wasn't dreaming.
We can be back tomorrow for Connecting Faith, the Friday installment. Joe Rathmann are talking about mothers and sons tomorrow, leading up to Mother's Day. Check it out tomorrow at noon.